Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 747 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Superman Sunday episode, and today I'm going to be talking about Superman number 8 from the creative team of Brian Michael Bendis handling the writing duties. We have Yvonne Rees handling the pencils on pages 5 through 13. He's inked on those pages by Joe Prado. Brandon Peterson handles the art for pages 1 through 5 and 14 through 23. Alex Sinclair on covers and Josh Reed on letters. So before I dive into the issue, I'm going to kind of start doing a little bit of a different intro. I know that we have a lot of new listeners constantly coming on the podcast, and we're working on getting onto a lot more platforms. We've been back and forth on Google Play. We finally got that all straightened out. We should be on Spotify very soon, as well as iHeartRadio. So again, if you're new to the show, if you're just discovering us, welcome. The Comic Source Podcast covers a wide variety of comics. We put out about 10 episodes a week, unless we have some specials. And we cover everything from Marvel to DC, Valiant, Top Cow, a lot of independents. We always have New Comics Wednesday that comes out early on Wednesday morning to let you know what you need to be looking for in your comic shops that day. We also do a lot of creative interviews, especially with creators from Aftershock, who are really good friends of the show. Also, Valiant. Get a lot of Valiant creators on. So if there's something that you want me to cover, if there's something you want us to talk about here on the show, you can reach out via social media. We're on Twitter. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. You can send us an email. You can get a hold of us any multitude of ways and let us know what you think about the show. And as I said, if there's something you want us to cover, convention season is getting ready to start up. It almost never ends anymore. It used to be that WonderCon right around Easter was the first big show of the year. But as I said, now, you know, we have Long Beach and C2E2 and Emerald City, and there are just so many conventions now that, as I said, the convention season almost never ends. But I'm going to be doing fewer conventions than I did last year. I think I went to 10 or 12 last year. It was a little too much to juggle with the day job. And plus, when I'm on the road, it's a lot harder to get episodes out. So we're going to be dialing back the conventions just a little bit this year. But if you are going to be at a local show and you find out I'm going to be there, please reach out. I always love to meet listeners. I'll hook you up with a free Comic Source lanyard. We can talk about what you like about the show, maybe even what you don't like. So it's always great to meet people who listen, who are supporters of the show. The one thing that I would ask everybody to do is, however you listen to the show, whether that be on iTunes or Stitcher, Google Play, soon to be iHeartRadio, Spotify, however you listen to the show, please go to that platform and rate us. The ratings really help raise the visibility of the show so that when people do searches on that platform, they'll for comics, will be toward the top. Again, I know we put out a lot of episodes. I know not everybody listens to every episode, and that's okay. That's part of the reason why we put out such a wide variety and kind of diverse topics. So a lot of exciting things coming later this year, exciting things in the works. I'm still hoping at some point to get to that X-Men chronology and kick that off. It's just a matter of finding the time. I wish I could do this full time, but I have a day job, a more than full time day job, doing IT for a restaurant group. So I'm kind of limited in my time here. But I love comics. Our philosophy here at the Comic Source is that we believe there's a comic book out there for everybody, and we're just trying to match up the right comic to the right person, so they can fall in love with this medium and become comic fans as well. So again, we appreciate all the support. Be sure you go over to lrmonline.com or the comicsourceblog.com for all past episodes of the show. Not all past episodes show up anymore in the on the platforms that you listen to your podcasts on, basically because we've put out so many episodes now, and there's a space limitation as far as your RSS feed goes. So the episodes are always the past episodes are always available, as I said, at LRM Online or at thecomicsourceblog.com. While you are at LRM Online, you can check out a lot of other pulp culture coverage for upcoming movies, TV shows, current movies, interviews with directors and actors and such. The site is a really great resource for all of your pop culture news. All right, let's go ahead and dive into issue 8 of Superman. For those who aren't aware, John Kent recently returned to Earth. He had aged. The journey back to Earth from being out in space with his grandfather, Jor-El, took much, much longer. You know, when it comes to space travel and speed and relativity, time can become a little bit elastic. So obviously Superman and Lois were surprised to see John return. An 11-year-old boy left and a 17-year-old kid comes back. And so, yeah, I talked before on the previous episode, issue 7, about how I didn't necessarily care for that time jump. I felt like we missed out on a lot of potential stories we could have told of John growing up. I think that those ages between 11 and 17 are really formative years. And again, there's just a lot of potential stories lost of John kind of learning how to use his powers, maturing, learning what it means to be a hero, seeing the impact that his father has on Earth and on the galaxy, and watching his relationship with his mother grow as well and learning from her about fighting for truth and knowing when, kind of how to pick your battles and the things that Lois is known for that she could have passed on to her son. So I don't know if we'll still get those types of stories. It very well could be that now that John has been aged to this age of 17, he'll stay there for years and years, an indefinite period of time in the comic stories, in the Superman titles, but, you know, 5, 10, who knows how long, how many years in real time, right? I mean, just like the rest of the comic characters do, they don't ever really seem to age, right? So not sure what's going to happen. Ideally, in my mind, we would see somehow John go back into space and then come back home as an 11 or 12-year-old. I don't know if that's possible. I don't know if that's what Bendis wants to do, because honestly, we haven't been given any sort of reason. I haven't seen Bendis say anything about why he aged John in the first place. So really curious about why that is. And again, I'm don't know that I'm 100% on board with it having happened, but it has happened nonetheless. DC Comics seems to trust Bendis. I'm still sort of waiting myself to form an opinion on it. I didn't think he started out particularly strong with the Man of Steel series. I thought there were some inherent problems there, but I thought that it had potential. Since he's taken over Superman and Action Comics, I don't feel like Action Comics has been very good. We've had one probably above average issue and many below average issues. Again, I think he's making wholesale changes like this aging up of John. The characterization of Lois is completely wrong. He's telling crime noir stories with Superman. It doesn't fit. It feels incongruous. I don't like it. All that being said, the Superman title has been a lot better, a lot more interesting. I'm not the biggest Bendis fan in the world. I did enjoy his Ultimate Spider-Man run when it first started, but I haven't read the majority of his work. And I know he tends to write in this sort of decompressed style where it takes a long time for anything to happen, which is really frustrating as a reader, especially one that's been reading comics as long as I have. I'm used to things moving along a little bit quicker. But, you know, there's the whole debate on, was it the popularity of Bendis and this decompressed storyline that led to publishers, collecting 6 issues and sort of writing for the trade, so to speak. And we've had that conversation here on the podcast a few times. Which came first, the chicken or the egg? You know, which came first, Bendis or the trade? What did one influence the other? I really think it was more of a coincidence. I think maybe the comic publishers were kind of heading in that direction anyway, and Bendis came along at the right time to sort of reinforce that was going to be a good policy. And it also reinforced for him personally his writing style, where he really does sort of write for the trade. But as I said, it becomes somewhat frustrating because it seems like the pace of the stories is slower than at least what I'm used to for the most part. So all that being said, the the Superman title, as it focused on things that were more sort of fantastical and superheroic, as opposed to Action Comics, which was more street level, Daily Planet focused story, as I said, feels very crime noir and doesn't fit Superman. The Superman title did feel very cosmic, very superheroic. It felt like what a Superman story should feel like. The problem has been Bendis still, he's not finishing any stories. It's, again, it's really frustrating. We saw the first arc start out and Earth was sucked into the Phantom Zone and Rogol Zar was there and Superman fought Rogol Zar again. So we had the Man of Steel series where Rogol Zar was central to the story. Superman fought Rogol Zar. We didn't get a resolution. Rogol Zar was shunted off into the Phantom Zone. And I thought, well, there's no final resolution. There's no answers to whether or not Rogol Zar is really responsible for the destruction of Krypton. But we'll take him off the page for a while and we'll come back to him at a later time and we'll get the answers that we're looking for, get some insight into who Rogol Zar is, because we really don't know who he is. It's all a mystery. He seems to be somewhat of a mustache twirling villain because we don't know anything about him and he's not relatable. But instead of Bendis doing that and putting him on the back burner for a while, instead the Earth immediately gets sucked into the Phantom Zone. And here we go with Rogol Zar all over again, which, okay, I'll go along with that. It feels like a very Superman story. The Earth trapped in the Phantom Zone. How is Superman going to save the day? And we did get a resolution to that story. But again, we Rogol Zar was a central character in the story, but we didn't get any background, maybe very little added to him as far as background and motivation. He's still a total mystery, and the Earth was rescued along with some members of the Justice League. It was returned to its rightful spot, and again, the Rogol Zar story was not resolved. So I even though the Superman title has been better than Action Comics, it's not really saying that much because it's been incredibly frustrating as well. We're just not getting what I feel are any milestones. Everything feels like I've been reading this title for 10 months now and nothing has happened, right? I'm getting these half-finished storylines, and everything that's happened so far could have taken place in about 3 or 4 issues. And I'm still waiting for the climax. I'm still waiting for some actual answers to what's been going on. And as I said, I'm starting to feel a little bit frustrated, as probably comes through in my reviews of the issues. And for that, I apologize. I'm trying to keep an open mind. I'm trying to understand what Bendis is doing here. For him, I'm sure it's not frustrating at all. For him, he's probably thinking, yeah, I'm telling these great stories, because he knows the end. He knows where he's going. We still have no idea where he's going. It's too many dangling plot threads. We really need some stories that wrap things up and feel like we're moving along, instead of Bendis just piling more and more mystery, more and more, why did this happen? Well, why did this happen? Well, why is Lois saying that she wants to live a separate life than Clark? Why did Rogol Zar come to Earth when he came to Earth? Who is Rogol Zar? What is the Circle? What's up with John aging? Will he ever go back? What's going to happen with Jor-El? Like, nothing but questions and answers we've gotten to storylines. They're solutions to problems, solutions to plot points. Like the Earth is in the Phantom Zone, like plot points that are more mechanical, if that makes sense, like events that have happened, as opposed to story points, as opposed to character explaining why characters are doing what they're doing and motivation. We've gotten, I feel like, nothing substantial there in terms of wanting to keep readers engaged. We've had some events, as I said, we've had some events and issues solved, like Rogol Zar attacking Earth and going to blow up Earth. Well, that was solved by Superman and Supergirl sending Rogol Zar to the Phantom Zone. The Earth gets trapped in the Phantom Zone. Okay, that gets resolved. But in terms of who Superman is to Bendis, what his reaction is to what Lois had said about them living sort of separate lives, he seemed to be sort of reluctant and resistant to it, but we never, I feel like we never got the end of that conversation. We never really got, in my mind, a good explanation for why Lois didn't tell Superman that she was back. You know, I know we're still in the midst of the Superboy story, so exactly why he aged as much as he did, what happened with Jor-El, again, we just don't know, and I'm starting to run out of patience. I did ask on Twitter last week, or it might even have been the week before, if people are enjoying Brian Michael Bendis's run on Superman. Maybe I'm in the minority. I know this guy's a beloved writer. I know he's talented. I know a lot of people enjoy what he does. And so maybe I'm in the minority. Maybe there's something that I'm missing. And if I am, I really want people to let me know. Like, please tell me what I'm missing. Tell me you're enjoying Superman. Tell me why you're enjoying it. And again, what's the missing piece for me? How come I can't seem to enjoy what Bendis is doing? Please, I'm begging you. I want to be enjoying these Superman books. I don't plan on any dropping any of them anytime soon. I still want to see what happens. I still want to understand. So in that way, I'm still interested. But again, I just feel like I'm running out of patience. So all right, I'm really going to dive into issue 8 now. Give the synopsis and my thoughts along the way. So the issue starts off with a really cool cover from Yvonne Reese. We see John with eyes blazing from heat vision, and it says, "The Son of Steel Unleashed." Looks like he's fighting a bunch of aliens. Superman is in the background, a very surprised look on his face. And, you know, obviously we did see John show up, you know, last issue, but this is really the first one on the cover where it becomes so obvious that John, when he returned, he's so much older than he was when he left. There's also a Rob Liefeld cover, which I did not care for. Don't care for Liefeld's style on Superman. It's not the certainly not the worst Liefeld drawing that I've ever seen. But again, didn't necessarily care for it. I don't think, as I said, Liefeld's the right artist to work on Superman. So anyway, it starts off. We're in Space Sector 2815. We're on Jor-El's ship. It looks like John Kent is watching some sort of holo feed from Earth. It looks like we're seeing the Teen Titans fight somebody. And as he's sitting there or laying there in bed, actually, Jor-El comes in and wants to know why John agreed to come on the trip with him. And John, he kind of avoids the question. He's like, "Well, you offered." And Jor-El's like, "Well, yeah, I know I offered, but why did you say yes?" And again, John answers with, "Well, you told me I needed to learn things. I needed to gain perspective. I agreed." And Jor-El's not buying it. He says, "Well, I know that's what you told your parents, but what drove you out here?" And there's no mention of the fact that he had just been rejected by the Teen Titans, and he felt like he needed to do something. He needed a change. It was a kind of a traumatic experience for him. But again, he doesn't talk about that. He tries to play it off. He tries to play it cool. He says, "Well, free trip into outer space with Grandpa. You know, no chores. Not the worst way to spend the summer." But Jor-El just kind of looks at him because he knows, again, this is not the real motivation for John coming out here. And so finally he says, "Well, because I don't get how any of this works." And Jor-El wants to know which part. He says, "Any of it, the world, the universe, my place in it, none of it makes any sense. And my dad, he's the greatest, but he's the greatest. You know, a lot of people, they want things from him and they want things from me because I'm his son. And I want to be that guy, but why? Like, why? I don't understand any of it." So it seems like at 11 years old, faced with this traumatic experience where he wanted something so bad, he wanted to be a member of the Teen Titans, he was rejected by them, he has all these powers which come with some responsibility, the fact that he's Superman's son comes with levels of expectation and responsibility. And he's 11 years old and he has way more expectations and responsibility and even personal responsibility, because he has these powers that can be extremely destructive if he's not careful with them. So it's a lot to put on an 11-year-old kid. So in a way, it could be that he was running away from the pressure and everything. I mean, I know I'm sort of reading into it. Because Bendis, again, he doesn't give us an answer. He just tells us that John is thinking, why? Just why? I don't understand anything. I don't understand. What is it that you don't understand, John? I'm, again, reading between the lines and trying to to figure out what Bendis is meaning by this. Why, just why? John says, why what? Like, why does he exist? Why does he have these powers? Why does he have this responsibility? So yeah, maybe he was running in the hopes of getting away from the pressure and just putting all that behind him so he didn't have to think about it for a little while. It is supposed to only be for the summer. And maybe he really is hoping to gain some perspective. So Jor-El sits down on John's bed next to him and says, you know, it just occurred to me that if things had happened the way they were supposed to, the natural order of the universe, we would never have met. I would have been dead. I would have been killed when Krypton was destroyed. And John says, yeah, and I'm a half Kryptonian, half Metropolis kid, which shouldn't even be a thing, right? And you can look at that in one of two ways. Jor-El, when he first found out about John, said, well, wait, Kryptonians and humans aren't supposed to be able to mate, so how did that happen? And also the fact that Superman surviving Krypton really shouldn't necessarily have been a thing either. Everybody, like all Kryptonians, should have died on that planet. It was only through Jor-El's, you know, creating the rocket and sending him away, which is sort of an improbable event when you add up all the numbers, right? So Jor-El says, we're both here now accidentally, somewhat impossibly, and that's kind of my problem. And John says, wait, well, why is it a problem? Is it a happy accident? Aren't we glad that we're here? And Jor-El says, yeah, but see, I've spent my life in the pursuit of science, you know, logic, things that make sense. And my own existence defies that. I should not be here. All my experiments that led me here defy it. And you, again, who should not be, because science said it should not have happened. So here we are, and I'm watching you and all these adventures that we've been on so far, and it's only proven to me that science in itself may be madness. Right? It doesn't make sense. It's illogical. And at that point, John gets this look on his face like, wait a minute, what is this guy talking about? And to Jor-El's credit, as he goes on to say, all the universe has offered is chaos. And what do you call those of us who've dedicated our lives to cataloging the universe, like organizing it, trying to make sense of it? And now I have to wonder, does any of this even have any meaning? Again, it seems like Jor-El's losing it a little bit. And the look on John's face is like, man, what is this guy talking about? And Jor-El sort of realizes it. He says, you know what? I'm sorry. You're a young man and I'm talking to you about things that you're probably not old enough to have perspective on or comprehend yet. And John says, no, I understood everything you just said. And Jor-El says, well, my point, John, is you're out here looking for answers. I'm looking for answers. I brought you out here to show you answers, but what if we can't find the answers? What if the questions we're asking, the answers aren't out here because there are no answers? And then kind of underneath his breath, Jor-El says, and what if there's no hand that guides me? So I find this interesting. I find this to be the most interesting Jor-El has ever been. But again, it's perspective and sort of understanding, and it could go one of two ways, because John's reaction is, and as he's relaying the story to his parents, he's saying, that was the exact moment I decided to leave Grandpa's ship and find my way back to Earth. Because at the time, he thinks to himself, what the hell kind of thing is that to say to an 11-year-old? And what he tells his parents is, at that moment, just like that, it went from, hey, cool vacation with Grandpa, to, uh-oh, I'm stuck in here with a crazy old man. And you really can think of it that way. It's totally possible that Jor-El is not playing with a full deck. It's also possible that he, you know, based on what we saw with him putting Superman through his paces and the whole Oz effect storyline, you know, supposedly he was being controlled by some outside influence. And now he's better, you know, quote unquote, he's better. But are there still some remnants of that? Did that harm his mind in some way? Did his years on Earth really put him over the deep end? I mean, his characterization has been a little up and down, a little back and forth. So I feel like we really still don't know who Jor-El is. Like, is he this crazy old guy? Should Superman and his family be looking at Jor-El as an enemy? Should they be trying to understand him and bring him over to their side? is he really crazy? Is he not? You could totally look at it either way, because he does sort of have a point, but his realization that, hey, John's not going to understand what I'm saying because he's just not old enough. And then for John's part, him deciding, yeah, it was that moment I decided to leave Grandpa's ship and find my way back to Earth. So again, clearly estrangement, clearly familial issues, relationship issues. And here we go again with Bendis. We're not really getting the answers to this as this particular story goes on. But it's interesting, and there's stuff there to be explored if this all stays in canon. Future writers can come on and tell stories of Jor-El and John in space. But you really, again, really looking for some answers here, looking for some definitive stuff as opposed to getting parts of the story where, okay, here it is, and you need to kind of bring whatever you're bringing to it as a reader and have it make sense that way. Because I don't, like, again, if I'm not necessarily enjoying this, is it because of what I'm projecting on the story? Is it really as simple as, hey, yeah, Jor-El is really just kind of crazy? Because the things he was saying make sense to me, even though they didn't make sense to John. But again, I don't know. Bendis is not giving us those answers. And again, I haven't read a ton of his stuff, so maybe he never does. Like, and please, if that's the case, then let me know, and I can stop trying to make sense of this and just try to take it in for what it is rather than trying to make sense. And at that point, I might just, which I can't imagine I would ever stop buying Superman titles, but maybe I would. Maybe I will. I don't know. Maybe I'll buy them and I won't read them, so I won't have an unbroken run, which I know is silly. Some people don't do that. I can concentrate on reading, you know, older Superman stuff, get back to the Superman chronology, because, again, it's not that I want to have it spoon-fed to me, but I would like to know what the writer's intentions are rather than just this guessing, which is what I feel like I'm doing right now. So John goes on to say that it was that moment that he realized the galaxy was much bigger than he originally thought. And we see him looking out the window saying, oh, that was not on the solar system test. So they're passing some planet that's surrounded by a bunch of purple-looking asteroids. As Lois is listening to this, she says, oh, my baby. Again, remember that Lois and Clark, they lost out on 6 to 7 years of their son's life, and they're still sort of reeling from that loss. And the scene shifts to present day, and John is saying, the galaxy's so big, Mom, like really big. And that's when he started to finally realize that. So the scene shifts, as I said, to present day. We're in the Fortress of Solitude, which is now in the Bermuda Triangle. For some reason, Bendis moved it there. Again, for reasons, I guess. I don't know. I always like the idea of it being in the Arctic and the snow, but it's where it is now. And Lois is saying, I never should have left that ship. And John's saying, no, Mom, you really should have. While we see Kelex analyzing John to test and make sure it's really him and not a clone and nothing's wrong with him. And Kelex is saying that the subject has been identified as Jonathan Kent, and they're doing a full anatomy and physiological scan. And Lois is saying to Clark, you make these choices, right? You think you're doing the right thing for your kid, but Jor-El manipulated us. There's no handbook on how to raise. And meanwhile, John is like, Mom, Ma. Like he wants to let her down easy. He wants to say, hey, it wasn't your fault. And so he tells her, you know, I've had a lot of time on the way back to you guys to think about the way you were going to freak out. And in theory, you're very right to freak out. It was a long time. Like, you did miss out on a few years. But I want to remind you that I'm here. I made it home. And part of the reason that I made it home is because you raised me to take care of myself. And I did. Look, I did it. It took longer than I was hoping, obviously, but I figured it out. I'm home. And I'm kind of proud of myself for doing that on my own. And I think you should be proud too. And he hugs Lois and Lois hugs him back. And she says, I am proud. And we see Clark, Superman, looking very sad as he watches them embrace, probably thinking about not just the time that he lost with John, but the time that Lois lost with John and the moments that Clark lost, like seeing that relationship between Lois and John continue to grow. It seems like in all the stories we've had so far of John being younger, there was always that strong bond between father and son, maybe not quite as strong of a bond between son and mother. So I'm sure that Clark, Superman, is thinking, yeah, look at all this time. Here's two people that I love more than anything, else in the world, and they're both hurting because they missed out on time together, and that's got to bother him. So he says, I need a minute, and Lois tells him, go, probably just assuming that there's some sort of disaster or catastrophe that's occurring somewhere in the world that he just noticed. And before he leaves, Superman says, well, the scan's almost done. I'll be right back. And he leaves. He flies out of the Fortress of Solitude at really, really fast speed. We get a great picture of his face. You can see just how angry and frustrated he is. Yvonne Rees does a great job of conveying that emotion. He's thinking to himself about all those years he's lost, the years of watching his son grow up. They were stolen from him by his own father, which, to be fair, to play devil's advocate here, Clark did agree. They both agreed, Lois and Clark both agreed to let John go into space. It wasn't like Jor-El came and kidnapped John. And also, Jor-El, he probably had no idea that John would actually be gone this long. Again, I'm playing devil's advocate here. Superman could possibly blame himself. Well, why did I let him go? He could be beating himself up. Instead, he's focusing all his anger on Jor-El. Jor-El very well may be, more responsible for it than Clark himself. Obviously, if he wouldn't have ever come and made the offer or wanted John to come out there into space with him, it wouldn't have happened. But again, I think it's not completely fair from Superman to say stolen from me by my own father. But I get it. Like, I would be, as a father, I would be furious too. And I totally would blame the other person as opposed to myself. But I just thought it was interesting because he goes on to say that, or think, my father made me Superman, but now I'm never going to be able to see my own son grow up. It wasn't Luthor that did this, or Brainiac, or Zar. It was my own father. And as he gets more and more angry, Superman is trying to tell himself to calm down. He says, you promised yourself you wouldn't do it again, but you might need to hit something right now. And we saw in the past with Brian Michael Bendis where Superman flew into space and he was punching asteroids because he was so angry. And we commented at the time on the podcast about how we really hadn't seen Superman do that before. It was a different take, which I didn't necessarily disagree with from Bendis. But again, it was just a different take. Superman is supposed to be the best of us. And to see him lose his temper like that was a little, I wouldn't say surprising, but as I said, just a different perspective, a different take. So Superman himself realizes he can't do that. He says, well, you can't just fly around hitting asteroids every time things don't go your way. There is something called the butterfly effect, which of course is the theory that if he goes out there and punches asteroids that into smaller bits, that maybe those smaller bits could have consequences if they hit a spaceship or crash on a planet or something like that. And apparently he promised himself that he wouldn't go around punching things like dumb livestock anymore. And so he's trying to tell himself, stop it, stop, like calm down. But then he thinks, well, if I happen to find something that legitimately needed to be hit, and he kind of looks around and quite fortuitously or coincidentally, however you want to think about it, he finds Mongol. Mongol, the planet destroyer, has showed up at the doorstep to his old Fortress of Solitude in the Arctic Circle. For what reason? Don't know. Superman thinks, well, is he looking for revenge or trouble or both? And he thinks, well, at some point, it's just rude not to take out all my frustrations on him. And we get this incredible double-page splash of Superman just unleashing on Mongol. Now, we get a little bit of that same fight in Naomi One. It's kind of the catalyst for the story that's being told in that title, written by Brian Michael Bendis, David F. Walker, with some incredible art by Jamal Campbell. So I hope you're all reading that. But all we get is that one punch from that two-page spread in this issue of Superman, and then the scene shifts back to the Fortress of Solitude. Kelix is saying that the full physical scan has been complete, and they're compiling all the data. John jokingly says, oh, I missed you too, Kelix. And as Superman returns, he says, how's everything here? Going okay? And Lois is like, well, we're soon to find out if our healthy one-of-a-kind 11-year-old son is really now a one-of-a-kind healthy 17-year-old son. Did you find something to hit? And he says, Superman says, don't make fun. She says, I'm not. I'm just asking because I'm hoping you brought something back for me to hit too. So, you know, obviously her frustration is sort of at the same level of Superman's. And his response is Mongol. And Lois says, oh, nice. Anything we can use in the paper? He says, you know, not really. And at that moment, Kelix says, well, the data that's been collected from John Kent's scans is now available for viewing. Would you like to see the results on the display now? And of course they do. And according to all the scans, the brain scan, the DNA scan, everything matches previous samples at the ratio of 100%. This is a 17-year-old Kryptonian Earth boy named Jonathan Kent. And John says, I told you. And Lois, ever the mother, no cancers or radiation. And Kelix says, no, none detected. John says, well, you thought I had cancer? Lois says, yes, you know, space cancer. Like, what is a mom going to think? Of course, she's going to be overprotective and think the worst. And John says, oh, yeah, sure, space cancer. That's all anyone talks about out there. And Superman says, well, you know, we had to check you out, buddy. I'm sending these scans over to the Justice League. We need to get a second opinion. And Lois says, yeah, because it just occurred to you at this moment that your father created all this technology, maybe just to watch us? And Superman doesn't respond, but she says, it's okay. That's why we're a team. And Superman says, yeah. And why, when it comes to my father, do I refuse to put together the obvious pieces? Like, all he's done is cause us grief. And yet, you know, I keep giving him the benefit of the doubt. And it's understandable. There are feelings there. You know, Superman lived all his life until Jor-El showed up thinking that his father was dead. He never got to grow up. He never got to have that father-son relationship with Jor-El. He had it with Pa Kent, but not with Jor-El, not with the one who would understand more about his powers and the universe and his place in it. So I can understand why Superman would always want to give Jor-El the benefit of the doubt, but he's right. So far, Jor-El has not shown himself to be worthy of the benefit of the doubt. He's shown himself to be somewhat of an enemy, or at least a detriment, a nuisance, if nothing else. So John jokingly says, so good news, it's a boy. Oh, wait, too soon? Yeah, probably, sorry. And Superman wants to get back to the story that John was telling now that he sent the data over to the Justice League, which, again, like, if this was a clone and... again, Jor-El, really brilliant scientist, he could easily have created a clone. And we don't know. It's totally possible. I almost would rather have that and have 11-year-old John return. And this is a clone that's been artificially aged and programmed with these memories. Maybe the clone itself even thinks it's John Kent and is coming back to take the place of John Kent on Earth so Jor-El can keep his grandson out there in space with him, either by not telling John about it or holding it. And so John is going along with it because he doesn't know he's been replaced by a clone back on Earth, or he's being held against his will. Because if it's a clone, it would have the DNA and the brain scans of John Kent, because Jor-El would have access to his DNA, obviously, he's right there, and access to his brain scans, could scan his brain while he's sleeping. So I have absolutely no idea if that's the case. As I said, just based on the fact that I don't want to miss out on stories of John Kent at 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, I would like, how about Clark trying to teach John how to drive? Wouldn't that be a fun issue? Something a lot of fathers can relate to. But again, I hope that that's the case only because I don't want to miss out on those stories. If it's not, then, you know, I guess we'll see. I would think that John would stay at this 17-year-old age for a long time. It would give Bendis a chance to do some other things that would be sort of cheap in my mind, but that I wouldn't necessarily put past a comic writer because we've seen it before, honestly. Things like, 6 months from now, there's some big event. John Kent sacrifices himself to save the world, dies in his father's arms. You know, the DC universe grieves. And then 3-4 months later, yay, here comes 11, 12-year-old Jonathan Kent. Again, really cheap, really a cheap way to play on the emotions of the readers, but certainly possible. Honestly, like I said, I hope that this is a clone, but all signs are not pointing toward that so far. Anyway, Superman says, yeah, I'm assuming Grandpa's initial existential crisis was only the beginning. And John says, well, Dad, I need you to listen to this next part. And Superman interrupts him saying, I need you to tell me everything that happened with my father. Everything. And you almost feel like Superman wants to hear every gritty little detail so that he finally can, like something will finally push him over the edge, push him over the line where he'll no longer give his father the benefit of the doubt, where he really can sort of cross the Rubicon, so to speak, and realize that, yes, I need to stop giving my father the benefit of the doubt. I really can put it all together in my mind that he is not our friend. He is not our family. He's somebody to be wary of and to distrust. And John goes on to say, well, that's the thing, Dad. It was so easy to distract ourselves and be so busy out there that we didn't have another conversation. We didn't think about – I tried not to think about what Grandpa said and the fact that he might be a crazy old man. There was always a mission. There was always something going on that had to be dealt with. The galaxy is sort of a mess. You know, I always thought the galaxy was like these giant pockets of nothingness and inhabited by these – little planets, these, you know, things where stuff would happen, but tended to be a little more orderly. But it's not like that at all. In fact, it's a lot like Earth. Everybody's really frustrated about everything, and no one listens to each other, and things escalate really quickly, and all of a sudden you're in these fights. And, you know, Grandpa would always try to swoop in and start some sort of negotiation, like you would do, try to settle things down, but it never worked. Not once, not ever. But we were doing really good work, and there were always people reaching out to us for help. And you could tell who the good guys were and the bad guys were. And for all of his being weird, Grandpa did have a good sense of which side we needed to be on. And as John is telling the story, we see another incredible two-page spread from Yvonne Reese, where it's sort of a montage piece. We see Jor-El and Superboy fighting some Thanagarians. Which not sure why they were fighting Thanagarians. Thanagarians tend to be allies of Earth most times, but that is indeed the case. And then on the next page, we see many Thanagarians knocked out, and I'm not sure what the other species is. They look relatively human, and in fact, it looks like there are maybe some sort of civil war. Maybe these were Thanagarians that were criminals, because we see some Thanagarians talking to Jor-El in the background. A lot of people without wings. Anyway, we're on this planet. It's the aftermath of the battle. And John's thinking, man, is anyone else hungry? And then a couple of Green Lanterns show up, Kilowog and Arisia. John says hi. Kilowog is pretty impressed with the work that has been done here. He says, well done, young Superman. And Arisia says, well, no offense, but I would be more impressed if it was actually Superman. And she says, will you be sticking around to help us clean up the mess? Because when they first arrived, that was her first observation. Oh, look, a couple of Kryptonian super people making another mess that the Green Lanterns are going to have to clean up. And John's response is, well, is there going to be food? Because if there's food, you know, I'll stay and help. And he introduces himself. And Arisia says, yeah, I'm Arisia, the Green Lantern of Sector 2815. John says, is that where we are? And Arisia's not even sure herself. She says, are we in 2815? John says, Kilowog rather says, I think this is 2817. She says, nah, close enough. And then John interrupts saying, you're friends with my dad, right? And Kilowog says, oh yeah, I owe your dad 100 times over. And John says, well, great, could you maybe give me a lift home? And Arisia's like, wait, to Earth? And John says, yeah, you know, if it's too much of a favor, you know, I'm sorry, but I have no idea where I am right now, how far away. And Arisia says, are you in trouble? John says, no, I mean, my mom knows I'm here. It's just, and Arisia says, we can take you home, but you know, isn't that your, and before she can finish her sentence, Jor-El shows up and, you know, cue awkward silence. And the Green Lanterns kind of beat a hasty retreat as Arisia says, you know, maybe you guys need to work this out amongst yourselves. And Kilowog says, great job here, sir. Really big fan of that son of yours. And they fly off. And Jor-El obviously is overheard because he says, I'm sorry about that. I was just, you know what, I'll take you home. And John, probably feeling bad, no, it's okay. And Jor-El kind of looks back over his shoulder as he walks away, and we see the look on John's face as he begins to look down, feeling ashamed. Sort of has that same benefit of the doubt and those same feelings. I mean, this is his grandfather. And for as much of a crazy old man as John may think he is right now, there has been a relationship that has grown. They've bonded through fighting these battles and just spending time together. And when John's relaying the story to his parents, he says, "I'm not sure if it was an actual entire year because I sort of lost track of Earth time, but I call the next period of time the summer that Grandpa didn't speak to me at all." And again, it's Jor-El probably lost in his own thoughts, probably feeling bad and guilty and not sure what to do. You got to remember, he has no experience being a father either, right? He sent Superman away. Kal-El, his son, sent him away when he was a very young child. He's never raised a child. He doesn't have the experience. And when he finally is sort of playing father figure, grandfather figure, wherever you want to put it here, he's starting with an 11-year-old kid, which is completely different than, you know, raising somebody from a little tiny baby and seeing how they come to depend on you and growing that bond. So it could be some of that. It could be the questions he has, or it could be, as I said earlier, he's just really crazy. So John goes on to say, "I did get a lot of reading done, and I desperately scoured the waves for Earth news, but there's so little. Like, as much as Earth and all its problems exist and are a big deal here, they barely exist to the galaxy at all. No one even knows about Earth, and if they do, it's all because of you, Dad." And so he's, again, watching some sort of holo feed, and Jor-El walks in. And he seems a little upset, like maybe just because Jor-El has been ignoring him. He says yes, and Jor-El is there to apologize, saying, "I'm sorry." And John says, "You know what? No, I am. You brought me out here, and you're trying to give me a real, and we don't know what he would have finished, real experience, real knowledge, real good time. I just don't know. But it's a lost moment here, unfortunately, where maybe they could have come to a better understanding. But instead, there's an alarm that goes off, and we see that the entire ship is being sucked into a black hole. And Jor-El's saying, "Brace yourself." And John says, "What's happening?" Jor-El says, it's a black hole. "I'm sorry." And the ship begins to break up, and we see it crash land on a planet. And John Kent is no longer even inside the ship, not sure if the ship just disintegrated or what. But as he begins to recover, as John Kent begins to recover, he says, "Okay, Dad, I'm really trying to describe this to you without making it sound, you know, I promise you what happened next is not your fault." Because what happened next is going to be pretty terrible for John. It's going to be one of the sort of seminal moments, one of the most important moments and events that happened to him while he was out in space. And again, he doesn't want his parents to blame themselves for letting him go. They haven't been, you know. We just saw in this particular issue that seems like all the focus for Superman is on blaming his father. But as any parent would, when you hear about your child suffering and going through something terrible, you, even if you didn't had absolutely nothing to do with how they got there, which again, that's not the case here. I feel like Lois and Clark, they did allow him to go, so they bear a little bit of responsibility. But I think John is saying this, "I don't want you to think it's your fault." Because what you want most as a parent is to be able to protect your children from anything bad. And I think that's where John is going here. "I don't want you to feel like what happened next is your fault because you weren't there to protect me." Right? And so that's what John wants Superman and Lois to know, because as he says that, as he says, "What happened next is not your fault," what we get is one final amazing double page spread from Yvonne Reese, and the planet that John apparently crashed on is Earth 3, the world of the crime syndicate. So as I said, amazing double page spread as we see the crime syndicate standing over John as he's kneeling there in the wreckage of Jor-El's craft. Where Jor-El went, we have no idea, but we do see the entire crime syndicate there of Ultraman, Superwoman, Owlman, Power Ring, Deathstorm, and Johnny Quick. Maybe not the entire crime syndicate now that I think about it, because I don't see Atomica anywhere. But anyway, John is in trouble. because we get the blurb for next issue, John Kent versus the Crime Syndicate of Earth 3. So, yeah, clearly not a good place to be. And obviously, this black hole wasn't just a phenomenon where Jor-El and John Kent got transported somewhere in the same universe, because Earth 3 is part of another multiverse, obviously. So at least in terms of John, he's been transported to another part of the multiverse. And maybe that's the answer about where Jor-El is. Maybe he just got moved somewhere within the same universe, or maybe he's in a different part of the multiverse. Again, we just don't know. But what we do know is John is in big trouble. So a pretty good issue in terms of the amount of story we get. I did enjoy this issue. If it's like you look past the change to John Kent, the time jump forward, and say, okay, it's happened, accept it, move on, take it for what it is. You know, whether or not it's a clone or something else is going to happen later on, can't think about that now, just focus on the story that's being told here, then it's pretty good. It's a pretty good story. There's interest there, interesting enough aspects in terms of the dynamic between their relationship between Jor-El and John, and as they sort of mirror the relationship and the lost time that Clark feels that he's lost with his son, the relationship with Lois, that narrative is all done pretty well. In terms of how much story we get, it's a pretty decent chunk of story, especially for a Bendis comic, and I think it ends on a great cliffhanger. Because the Crime Syndicate of America is they're characters that I really, really enjoy. In fact, I have some action. I have a complete set of all the action figures that came out during Forever Evil that are up on my sort of my display here of all the characters. I find them to be really interesting characters. So Bendis's take on them will be interesting to see. Like, how much will it be true to this version of the Crime Syndicate of America that we really saw fleshed out by Geoff Johns in the Forever Evil storyline? Or will Bendis just kind of throw all that stuff out and give us his own take on the characters? It's going to be interesting to see. So quite a bit happened in this issue. The artwork, I thought that last issue we had this kind of the same setup here where Brandon Peterson is illustrating the pages where it's the flashback with Jor-El and John in the past, which is a good way to do it in terms of you don't necessarily mind if the artwork doesn't look the same, because it helps to distinguish. And plus it's helping Yvonne Rees stay on schedule, because his art is very dynamic, very detailed, and he can be a bit slow at times because of that. And we haven't had any Superman books ship late yet, so that's been good. That being said, I think last issue, issue 7, Brandon Peterson did a better job. I thought his art was more detailed. It had a more polished and finished look. It starts to look a little lazy in this issue. And I don't know if it's because he had less lead time to work on the pages in this issue. I'm not sure. I have no idea. But again, I just feel like the art's not bad by any stretch of the imagination. But it doesn't. It feels like there's a bigger difference between the art. Whereas in issue 7, Peterson was putting so much detail in his art that it almost felt like Yvonne Rees art. Like, you could see less of a difference between the two styles, where here it's a little more pronounced. So again, it makes sense because one is flashback, one is modern day or current time, however you want to think about it. But it just, yeah, I just didn't care as much for the Brandon Peterson art in this issue. I thought it wasn't quite as good. There's not much I can say about the colors. The colors from Alex Sinclair have been spectacular from the moment Alex got on Superman with the Man of Steel series, throughout all the different artists and art styles on that series. The fact that we had a consistent color palette and look in terms of colors by Alex really helped bring that together. And feel the same here. This art would probably feel even more discordant if it wasn't for the fact that Alex is handling the colors on this. And especially the colors on that last page, how everything is sort of dark and foreboding with the crime syndicate standing over John. So it's a real contrast to the scenes in current time, where both John Kent's outfit and Superman's outfit are very brightly colored. And yeah, really, really great job from Alex Sinclair. He is a consummate professional, incredibly talented color artist. And I never have to worry when Alex is coloring a book that it's going to be anything less than spectacular. And really have to give him a shout out for that scene with the black hole as well. His use of swirling colors there, oranges and purples and whatnot, is really gives you a sense of movement and power from this, what turns out to be a multi-universal black hole. So that does it for, actually one more thing I should say, as the black hole sucks John into it, we see the colors go from positive to negative. It kind of looks like a negative exposure if you've ever looked at one of those from film, which is a really cool effect as well that we get from Alex. So I wanted to point that out as well. I mean, really, really cool panel. So that does it for this issue of the Comic Source. Again, I implore you to reach out to me and let me know if you're enjoying the Superman titles, Man of Steel, or Superman rather, and Action Comics, I should say. And if you can explain to me what it is that I'm missing from Bendis, maybe you're a longtime Bendis reader and you're really digging what he's doing, please explain it to me. Help me understand. I want to like these stories more. I want to like his characterization more. I should say that. The Superman story is fine. I think it's a fun, interesting, superheroic story. The Action Comics, I'm not as enjoying as much. Again, I feel like it's a crime noir story, which I don't feel necessarily suits the character. But what I really want to understand is the characterization. I think that's where I'm falling down. I'm not understanding the way Bendis handles characterization for whatever reason. It's eluding me. So again, I implore you to reach out. Let me know your thoughts. And we'll obviously continue to cover the Superman titles. I do want to get back to the chronology. It's been quite a while since we've done any of the Superman chronology. So I definitely owe you guys a World of Metropolis episode with World of Metropolis issue 3, which I think covers Jimmy Olsen, I want to say, but I'm not 100% on that. But we'll find out the next time I'm able to get back to the chronology. So again, really did enjoy this issue for as many of the problems as I did have with it. I do enjoy what the Superman title is trying to do, at least. So I'll give Bendis credit for that. So thanks for joining us, everybody. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. The Comic Source is a member of the LRM Podcast Network, so when you visit the site, be sure to check out some of our other podcasts like Los Fanboys, our official movie and TV podcast hosted by Joseph Jammer Medina, Netflix and Chill, hosted by Nick and Carrie, covering a wide variety of film and television topics with Game of Thrones and Star Wars as particular favorites, and finally, Mike and Mark's Marvelous Adventures, as these two former athletes share their love of sports and geek culture by chatting about anything and everything sports and geek related. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.